probably one of the most famous issues in Tanakh. And it's an issue which is actually raised by all the Gdolei Rishonim. It needs literally tens and tens of hours to deal with this issue. But I thought maybe just by way of introduction, we'll introduce the issue a little bit based on the Ramban. And the issue actually is one which is, as I said, so fundamental. Let's read the Pesukim first, in Perek Zayin. And it's not just the Perek Zayin, as you know, one has to read really all the Pesukim, but particular. This week is Parshas Vayera, so we'll read the Pasuk that's relevant over here. Perek Zayin, the Perek says, Pasuk Aleph. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Reina Saticha Lahim Lepharo, Va'aron Achicha, Yiyeh Neviecha. The word Neviecha, by the way, I assume there are several interpretations. By the way, here you see clearly that Aaron has a din novi. Rashi and many Rishonim interpret this to mean that Aaron was a meturgeman, because Moshe Rabbeinu, as you know, complained that he's not able to go ahead and he needs someone to assist him. So Hashem gave him a meturgeman, someone who's a spokesman, and that's Aaron HaKohen. The Torah calls him here Neviecha. The word Neviecha, Rashi points out, is a very famous Rashi, that the word Neviecha is related to Divs Vasayim. Many Rishonim say that. The word Navi, Navi is someone who communicates with others. The difference between Navi and Ksuvim, you probably know, is that a Navi is someone who communicates, has a message to communicate to others, and Ksuvim is that which is written down. They call it the Hagiographa, that which is written, the Latin. Hagiographa, that which is written, but there's no, shall we say, message that has to be transmitted. Rav Chaim Briska has another distinction between Navi and Ksuvim. All the Rishonim deal with this, especially in like the Gemara Megillah. Gemara beginning of Megillah, Gemara points out that Chagas Chayim Malachi are considered to be Nevi'im, and Daniel is not a Navi. Why should Daniel not be a Navi? Daniel is someone who has a, shall we say, very significant content in terms of the Dalai Malchios, in terms of the four kingdoms that are going to subjugate Klal Yisrael. And yet he's part of Ksuvim, Masha'en King, Chagas Chayim Malachi, they are Nevi'im. The answer, of course, is, as Rashi points out in Gemara Megillah, and the Rishonim, the Raman, the Ramban, and all the Rishonim say this, that a Navi is someone, as Rashi points out here, Nivs Fasayim. He has a message that he has to communicate to others. Ksuvim, there's no message. There's no obligation to deliver any message. That's why it's called Ksuvim, as opposed to Nevi'im. And this is the subject of a lot of discussion, especially the Rambam on the Buchim, and other Rishonim, and Sugya Ba'abasa, in the first parak, the Daf Yomi, starting Ba'abasa tomorrow. That's like a little hint. Anyway, so the Daf Yigimel, the Gemara there discusses who wrote what, and what belongs to what, namely in the corpus of Tanakh. What is included in the Nevi'im, what's included in Ksuvim? For example, I'll just give you one or two. I'm going off the topic, I haven't discussed it, started yet. But anyway, there are Sfarim that seemingly are misplaced. Let's take Sefer, I assume you understand why Sefer Tehillim, where's Tehillim found? Tehillim is found in Ksuvim. Why is it found in Ksuvim? Is it Divrei Nevuah? No. So how is Ksuvim written? With Ruach HaKodesh. How do you define Ruach HaKodesh, Jonathan? There's a big machlokes of Rishonim with Ruach HaKodesh. Is. How's the distinction between Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah? Generally, we assume Nevuah means has some futuristic element attached to it. And Mashenk and Ksuvim, Ruach HaKodesh is like a heightened awareness of the present. I'll translate it like that for the for now. But there are some Sfarim in Tanakh, Daniel's one of them, which has L'chorah Divrei Nevuah. It talks about the four kingdoms that are going to subjugate Klal Yisrael. And yet, that's included in Ksuvim. So I told you, based on the Gemara Megillah, that the Gemara, I only mention Megillah because I know everyone learns it here. Rabbi Fuchs, Shlita my Rebbe, he's very into Megillah. So the Gemara points out that there you have a message to be transmitted. Mashenk and Daniel, there's no message to be transmitted. But there are one or two other Sfarim you probably can think of. Just think for a moment. Which perhaps are misplaced in terms of where they're positioned. Are they part of Ksuvim? Are they part of Nevi'im? Give me one example. You can't think of any examples. Wow. Sefer Yoshua, where is it found? Mm-hmm. Among the Nevi'im. Does it belong in the Nevi'im? Is there a Divrei Nevuah over there? Sefer Yoshua? Yeah. Essentially, what does Yoshua focus on? Correct. Kibush v'chiluk, the conquest of Eretz Yisrael and the division of Eretz Yisrael. Ma keshel l'nevuah? What's it doing there? That's one of the questions that Rishonim were very troubled with. Okay, I'm not answering these questions now. These separate shiurim. But Rashi here notes that the term Nevi'echa, Meturgeman, is a person ha'machriz u'mashmi'a la'am Divrei Tochochos. That's what Rashi says. Nivs Vasayim, someone who has a message to, shall we say, transmit. Okay, I'm going further in the Pesukim. So now the Torah says in Pasuk Beis that Hashem tells Moshe, I'll turn to Daber and call Asher at Tzaveka. The Aaron Achizim, Daber El Paro. Aaron will be the spokesman to Paro, Vishilach, and now we have the Pesukim that I want to talk about. which, as I said, needs hundreds of hours of discussion, but I'm just going to scratch the surface. Vani akshe elei paro. What does Hashem say? I'm going to harden Paro's heart. V'hirbesi es olsosai v'es mosai v'eretz Mitzrayim. The obvious question which the Ibn Ezra asks right here on the spot, the reason why I cite Ibn Ezra, because he's always the Pashtun who's very on top of Psukim, and the obvious question that the Ibn Ezra asks is the following question: if Hashem hardened Paro's heart, ma pisho u'ma chatoso? What was his transgression? What was his chet? And those, how's it possible, as you mentioned, don't be the punishing? If he's an onus, he has no choice, and he has to sin. Now Rashi, as you know, is medayik in the Psukim. Look at Rashi over here. Rashi has a deal in Pasuk Gimel. It's also a famous Rashi. This Rashi, by the way, is discussed in a very beautiful sefer that I saw once called Darash Narashese. He discussed this Rashi. It says, Vani akshe eslei paro. So Rashi says, Me'achar, shehishia behisvis kenegdi. What did Paro do? Paro, hirshia, was a Rasha. Behisvis kenegdi. How do you translate that lashon of hisvis? Very striking lashon. What exactly does Rashi mean? Hisvis kenegdi. That apparently, what was he involved in? Hatrasa. Which in English, you're probably familiar with that word, it's a modern Hebrew term actually. Hatrasa. And obviously, he's formulating against Ribbono Shel Olam. Begodol lefanav shein nachasuach v'yumas avicham lasez leiv shalim loshu. And Hashem knows full well that what? The non-Jewish world, that ein nachasuach v'yumas akum lasez leiv shalim loshu. They have no intention of doing what? Really doing tshuva. And therefore Hashem says, Tov li sheyizka shalibo, better that she harden his heart, in order that what? Leman harbos bo'ososai, v'sakiros gurosai, by virtue of hardening his heart, and I'm compelled now to what? To, as you would say, lay on him more makos. What will that do? That will enhance the glory of Hashem. People will see the glory of Hashem even further. V'chein bidoso shakorish bochum. And this is what Hashem does. Maybe puranah salvishe ovdi kachavim. What does Hashem do? He punishes the Rishoyim among the non-Jews, in order that we should, shall we say, recognize that since Hashem is punishing them, we should take Musa from that, and we should have fear. Shanemar, goes to Pasuk in Tzvanya, the Rabbi says, Hichrati goyim, nasham epinosam, amarti artirol si tichli Musa. But Rashi here says something else, which is what I'm interested in. Says Rashi, v'yafo b'kein, v'chomish makas v'rishonus lo nema v'yachazik Hashem et lei paro, elav ayechzak lei paro. Rashi has a distinction between the first five makos, that not Hashem, he's not the one who hardened the heart of Paro, but rather Paro himself hardened his own heart. That's what Rashi has been dying from the Psukim. But in the last set of makos, Hashem is the one who hardened the heart of Paro. So of course the question now is, even according to Rashi, that in the last five makos, Hashem is the one who hardened his heart. So now the question is, how is it possible to punish Paro if he has no bechira? He has no free will, no free choice. This kashya is asked by all the Gedolei Rishonim. And as I said, literally an entire course has to be given to be miyashiv this kashya. Now Rashi pointed out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, even if Paro will do tshuva, he won't do it. But then shalom, his tshuva will not be, shall we say, of an authentic nature. His tshuva will not be a real tshuva. And as a result, we'll still have to punish him. If Hashem is going to punish him, so then what will people say? That Hashem doesn't accept the tshuva of people who transgress, who do sins. And they don't really know what Hashem knows, namely, that Paro is not doing tshuva of Leif Sholei. We mortals, we finite human beings, will not be aware of that. Only Hashem has that awareness. Ki Hashem yireh lalevav, the Navi says. Hashem sees what's in our heart. And he knows that Paro is not doing tshuva of Leif Sholei. But people don't know that. So what does Hashem say? Better than what? I should harden his heart. That he should not do tshuva at all. And then I'll be able to punish him, and then they won't say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mekabel the tshuva of Rishoyim. That's how Rashi, a very, very striking Rashi, that's how Rashi interprets the psukim. And then what we see clearly, as I said, that according to Rashi, that first he distinguishes between the first five makos and the second set of makos, namely the last five makos, Hashem only hardened his heart in the second set of five makos. Now, by the way, that needs... one has to look into this matter very carefully, and I'm not right now going through this, but it would be kedai for you to do so. Now, this week's Pasha is the source of this, because how many makos do we have this week's Pasha? Dam, Tzvadeya, Kinim, Orom, Dever, Shchin, Bara. Those are the makos. So now we have to, even for a second, if we look for a moment, let's take a look at the first makos, the makos of Dam. So here we'll take a look and we'll see in Perek Zayin, where Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and carry out this maka. By the way, there's a sefer that's coming out soon called Shailobi, which has an analysis of all the makos, and a very fascinating article. I happen to know the mechaber. And so he discusses how the makos are divided into sets of three. That's not the chiddush of the mechaber, that's already mentioned in the Agadah Shel Pesach. Rabbi Huda Omer, Detzach, Hadash, Ve'achav. But the question is, what exactly is the common feature of this trilogy? Namely, what's the common feature of this tripartite arrangement? There's a big discussion among the Rishonim, and there the Mechaber, very beautifully, I think, has a very fascinating discussion of this matter based on the Rishonim, etc., also with charts over there, in order to demonstrate this point. Okay, let's take a look at Dam. I just want to give you a preview of forthcoming events. Anyway, so with reference to Dam, it says here, Hashem is going to impasuk Yud Zayin. And of course the fish are going to die, and as a result the Nile is going to be in a very difficult situation, and Hashem tells Aaron to of course carry out the Makkah. We spoke about this last time because Hakar Satov, and that's what they do, and then the fish died, and of course everything is shall we say a rather blatant stench that exists over there. There's dam everywhere. And the Chachamei Mitzrayim also attempt to simulate the Makkah in Pasuk HaVei, and as a result, Vayechzak leiparo v'losham aleim. So of course, Vayechzak is a right to Rashi Shita, that it was Paro himself who hardened his own heart. That's Dam. Take a look at Tzvadeya, since we're already looking, that after the Makkah of Tzvadeya, which is the next series of Psukim, and when Moshe Rabbeinu again removes the Tzvadeya, so look at Pasuk Gidal, Perches Pasuk Gidal, page 172 in the pagination here, Vayar Paro ki hoisa arbacha, Pharaoh sees as arrested, again, he hardened his own heart. The Lashon is different. That also is troubling. Why it says the first time, this needs a lot of attention. There's hundreds and hundreds of hours of attention that has to be directed to these psukim. Next makkah, of course, is Kinim, the third makkah of the first set. And again, when the Chatum say, Etzbalokim, Pasuk Tes Vav, Vayechzak Leiparo V'Losham Aleihem. Again, Vayechzak, he hardened his own heart. We have the first three. Now let's get the next set of three. Oro. So again in Parakhes, on page 173 over here, that Moshe Rabbeinu removes the Oro, and then in Pasuk Chavches, 174, Vayach Bein Paro Eslibo, Gamma Parmazos. So again, he himself hardened his own heart, so we see that Rashi again is just following the text. Item number 5, Dever, when all the pestilence in the animals of Egypt, in Pasuk Zayin, Perek Tes Pasuk Zayin, Vayichbad leiparo v'lo shilach et ha'am. Vayichbad leiparo. You have to know some diktok here. But let's assume this also, again, Rashi obviously assumed that he hardened his own heart. And continuing, Shchin. Let's take a look at Shchin and Barat. Shchin, you can see, which is the boils. And there also, Vayichazik Hashem es leiparo. That's Pasuk Yudbeis. So which makkah is that? Dom, Sradea, Kinim, Oro, Deber. Shrin is number 6. So Rashi is Lashitaso. Hashem is the one who hardened his heart. That's what Rashi is saying. And you'll go on. You'll see that more or less Rashi is following the text of Sukkim. And that's the Diyuk of Rashi, that only in the first set of 5 Makos does Paro harden his heart. And the subsequent Makos, Hashem is the one who hardens his heart. However, most Rishonim do not agree with this. Most Rishonim assume that when it says, Vani Akshay Slay Paro, it does not mean that his Bechira was taken away. But rather, what does it mean? On the contrary, he was given Bechira. He was given a free choice. It's a very striking thing. Would you not say so? What most Rishonim assume, namely, anyone else who would be subjected to these Makos would certainly have lost his Bechira a long time ago. And unquestionably, the moment the person is subjected to this kind of tyranny, divine tyranny, if you will, so certainly a person immediately would quickly, because of fear and because of angst, unquestionably, he would have released Klal Yisrael from bondage, from their situation of Shibud, no question about it. But Hashem wanted Paro, in effect, that he wanted him to send Klal Yisrael to free them mitoch bechira chavshis. They should be sent out of his sense of goodwill, that this is the proper thing to do. And as a result, what did Hashem do? Vani akshes le Paro. Hashem was machbid the heart of Paro, in order that he should decide now, do I want to send Klal Yisrael out or not? Of course, he decided not to send him. One second. This pshat is the Ibn Ezra. It's the pshat of the Ramban, here in his second Perush over here, in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. It's the pshat of Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar, also in the second Perush. It's the pshat of the Sfarno. And that's how the Sefer HaYikrim, Rabbi Yosef Albo, interprets it. And the Mabit, the Beis Elokim, and the Shara Tshuva, just trying to think of all those that have this interpretation, because they assume, not as we generally tend to assume, that the situation is that Bechira was taken away from him, but rather, on the contrary, he was given Bechira. Now, unquestionably, there's also, by the way, Jacob, since you are, I see, there's a very beautiful piece on this, written by Hagoyin Moran Lavaron Halevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, in his collection of essays, Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind. I assume you possess that sefer. If you do not, you are not permitted to go back to Chicago. You do not have that sefer?
Personally, no. I'm sure
it's
my house.
I hope it is. Can't imagine it's not. Rabban Soloveitchik, in the 60s, I heard him discuss this issue when I was in high school. And he has a piece on this in Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind. Do you have a copy of that?
I better get one.
I don't know exactly how to find it. I think it's sort of out of print. I'm not sure why. Why didn't it reprint it? It's an absolutely astounding sefer. Phenomenal sefer. Are you familiar with that sefer? You know, I'm familiar. It's a series of articles of essays that he gave his Divrei Hashkafa, Hashkafa Shiurim, on many topics, including the topic of Torah and Bada, Torah and Secular Studies, several essays, an essay on the State of Israel, an essay on the Shoah, an essay he has about the role of women, many, many beautiful essays. I heard Kibbutz Mosel Shiurim in the 60s, and it was subsequently published in a very beautiful form in this Logic of the Heart, Logic of the Mind. Okay, maybe you'll somehow find a way to reproduce it, or... One second, I've just begun. Why are you... Let me just... I have barely said Shalom Aleichem for a moment. Anyway, I'm just showing you, there are a lot of Rishonim who take this tack, and that seems to be the popular attack among the Rishonim, that he was given Bechira. It's true, there are those who claim that the Bechira was taken away from him, not because had he done Tshuva, it wouldn't be a Tshuva Shlema, what Rashi suggests. Rashi says his Tshuva would not have been a Tshuva B'lei Sholei. That's why Hashem had to take his Bechira away from him. That's not what they say. But they assume that this is part of the Onesh. That what happens, a person who continues to wallow in Chet, and he becomes so wicked that almost it's impossible for him, shall we say, to go ahead and do tshuva, so we take away his Bechira. Who is the one, of course, the most famous of all the Gedolei Rishonim, who makes the suggestion? The Rambam. Rambam, Maimonides. So Maimonides writes very clearly in Hilchos Tshuva that he points out that it's possible a person will commit such a terrible sin, or many sins, many chatoyim, and in effect, the situation is we are monea from him the possibility of doing tshuva. We don't let him do tshuva, and we don't give him a chance to do tshuva, and thereby he's going to die in his wickedness, and that's what the Torah said. The Rambam quotes the Pesukim, Bani Achazek, Eslei Paro, and the Rambam writes over there, Lefisha Choto, Me'atzmo Tchila, he sinned, the Rambam says, on his own, and he caused us a lot of tzar. Therefore, the halacha said that he cannot do tshuva till we punish him, and therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mechazik es libo. The Rambam over there in Hilchos Tshuva, I think it's a very well. The Rambam in the middle of Prokim deals with Bechira Chavshis. In fact, the Rambam had to include the dinim of Bechira Chavshis in Hilchos Tshuva, because without Bechira Chavshis, tshuva is not possible. If there's no Bechira, the whole concept of tshuva is completely and totally without foundation. You know, the Rambam brings many rayas. The Ramban also actually refers to this Yesod, and the Rambam said there are many psukim. The Ramban is found here in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. I have it right in front of me, a Xerox there. But there are those who disagree with the Rambam, those who contend that in reality it's not possible that a person should chas v'sholom, that the doors of tshuva should be closed to him, and even a person is wallowing in sin, and is a recidivist, and is constantly sinning, there's no way that a person could actually, Rahman al-Sun, have the possibility of tshuva taken away from him. And whose position is this? Of course, after the end of the Shari Tshuva, he completely rails against the Rambam. He brings many Pesukim Tanakh, of course, to support his position. The Rambam has Pesukim Tanakh to support his position. So we have here a number of different positions on this matter that are very significant. But the Rambam is a very famous Rambam that he writes that, as I said, the Ramban also alludes to this idea, this is Sod, but he himself doesn't subscribe to it. And it's a little difficult to understand the position of the Rambam because, in effect, if the possibility of doing tshuva has been foreclosed, correct? So why, in effect, is Hashem sending Paro, Moshe Rabbeinu, and tells him as he is to sing? Correct. My followers told me to sing that song. Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt's land. Tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. You know who sang that? You won't remember. I don't remember either, before my time. But my father told me to sing that song. So why would that happen? It's like talking to the walls. What do they say in Chinese? Meretz Odevant. That is Yiddish, means to talk to the walls. Does that make any sense? Why would he talk to the walls? So the Rambam asked the Kasha, don't you worry, the Rambam was a smart man. And Frank Dazel the Kasha, the Rambam also says the same question. And the Rambam says, to answer this question, that the reason why Hashem sent Moshe is in order to tell the world that when Hashem prevents a person from doing tshuva, he can't do tshuva, he's going to die because of his wickedness that he did. B'tchila, b'rtzono. But anyway, the Rambam's b'chadish does this chiddush. The Rambam's a chiddush that from Paro, Paro's no b'chira chavshis, he can't do tshuva. The Ramban has such pirush over here, Perek Zayin Pasuk Gimel, in the first explanation that he provides. Rabbeinu Mechaya also has the first explanation, also like that, that tshuva was, the possibility of tshuva was taken away. If I'm not mistaken, the Meiri and the Chibur of tshuva also has such an idea. So it's not just the Rambam who has this idea exclusively, but there are other Rishonim who also suggest this notion. However, most Rishonim learn punk faker. Not that the Bechira was taken away from him, but rather they assume, on the contrary, he was given Bechira because there's no way without Bechira being given to him that he could have continued on his merry way. A person who's subjected to the kind of makos that he received, right away you would quickly just, shall we say, throw up your hands in despair. Whatever you want, I'll do. And yet Paro somehow was able to maintain his intransigence. How do you explain that? So the Rishonim say the explanation is he was given Bechira. And of course he decided not to send them out. I just more or less summarized the entire spate of Rishonim to deal with this issue. Yes?
Don't we usually say that Rishonim get their any rewards in this world?
The Gemara says that every place in Shas, it's also Pesukim Chumash. But the fact of the matter is that the question is, in terms of you asking, as far as Paro is concerned.
And why should Paro get all this punishment? Paro should be punished if he's okay. So wicked, he should be punished in the next world.
Okay.
Rashi Gilbert.
Excuse me? So that's the assumption of Rama. It doesn't apply to this situation. Someone is so suffused with wickedness and drowning and wallowing in that wickedness, this doesn't apply. That's a chiddush, also a chiddush gavur. Because you're right, Hayom la'asos v'vachal l'kav v'schar, we're just learning Kiddushin, the Yisod, the end of the first parak, if you recall. The chiddush between, shall we say, people who are best in tzaddikin, but they do one or two things, they I let astray, okay, I let him speak, I have to let you speak as well. Go ahead.
Wouldn't Hashem taking away
Paro's fear
of the Makos also be getting away with his free will?
Doing what? Hashem doing?
Hashem making Paro not scared of the Makos, would that also be getting
away
with his free will? No, I don't know if Hashem...
That's just to help him make a decision, in effect that he should decide whether...
He's taking away the fact.
Okay, I hear the question. It's a valid question. It needs attention. I'm not focusing on that right now, but I hear the question. It's a good question. Okay, I just more or less summarized some of the positions of Rishonim on this issue. As I said, it's discussed by many, many Rishonim. This is one of the most favorite topics of Parshoni HaMikra in this week's Parsha. And also, Dodo Rishonim, I mentioned at least the 7 or 8, maybe more, and it would be kedai to look into this matter, maybe write a doctoral thesis on this topic. Easily can be written without difficulty. It needs a lot of attention. Each Rishon has to be examined. Now, we see from the Bakovsha Moshe Rabbeinu, by the way, that Paro actually decided to choose a different approach. Because what did Moshe Rabbeinu ask of Paro? He didn't ask to send Klal Yisrael to freedom. But what did he ask him for?
3 days.
A furlough. A furlough of 3 days. Take a look at the psukim. The parakas over here, page 173. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro, Derech shloshes yomim, nelech b'midbar, v'zabachna l'Hashem Elokeinu, pasuk of Gimel. It's also found earlier in Shemos, in last week's Pasha. But that you did learn already, so you can't deny that. Parakei, pasuk, Gimel. What did Moshe Rabbeinu say? V'yomer lahi ha'ivrim nikru aleinu, nelchana derech shloshes yomim b'midbar. Let's go for a 3-day furlough. V'nizbuch al Hashem Elokeinu, pen yivgayinu b'adev v'chorev. So Moshe Rabbeinu did not say that after 3 days they're going to come back, but he led Paro to believe that why we're going for a 3-day holiday. Correct? There are people in the yeshiva who go for 3-day holidays. Middle of this month, some are going for even longer. I never heard of such a thing. But that's what they do. That seems to be a minhag. Minhag says Rabbeinu Thomas, no skills get him. By the time of Abbasa, the evening of Abbasa. Tomorrow is a daf yomi, so we have to meant to study about Abbasa. So he says, Minhog, Mem Nun Hei Gimel, Osios Gehenim, Gimel Hei Nun Mem.
My Kesha.
You didn't figure out the Kesha by now, boy.
No, I'm saying, why is Minhog?
What? Because there's some Minhog that have no foundation, like this Minhog.
That's what he was referring to.
Correct? That's what I'm referring to. So the question is, why did Moshe tell the truth? That Klal Yisrael wants to leave Mitzrayim entirely. So what's the answer? To show the richness of power that even for 3 days he's not willing to let us go. He doesn't even want to give us a 3-day furlough. He's not masking even to, literally, to go for 3 days. You'll take a look in the Drusha Saran. Yes, it's Kasha. I think it's a Drusha Aleph. He discusses this whole matter as well. But this issue is an issue which is very vexing, at least vexing to me. How could Moshe Rabbeinu do this? How could he go ahead and mislead Paro? What do they call that in halachic parlance? What's this issue called? Gnevas Das. It's a Gemara Chulin. You can't even steal Gnevas Das of a Goy, but not Jews. Called Allah by the Raman, Shalach, Shavishpat. So how could he go ahead? We're talking about a Goy. And his kavanah is to completely release them from bondage. And yet, what does he do twice? We see it in Shemos and also in Vayera, that is a 3-day furlough. So, of course, the answer is the following. And this is the apostate answer, which is the correct answer. Let's say you have a Jew who, shall we say, is makpid to daven with a hat. Our Soloveitchik was very makpid to daven with a hat. Not only our Soloveitchik, many others are makpid to daven with a hat. I'm not getting into the whole issue right now. It needs a lot of discussion. But let's assume there's a minhag ha-mokom, that particular mokom, people daven with a hat. So now, a gazan comes ahead and takes my hat. So now, how do I get my hat back? I go to the gazan and I say to him, listen, I know you stole my hat, but I need my hat for davening. Could you give it back to me for a few moments so I can daven with my hat? As far as I'm concerned, the hat is my akeh. That's my, let's say, it has to be my shita. Give me back the hat for a few moments so I can daven with my hat. I can daven mincha. So now the question is, must I return to the gazan the hat after davening? Jonathan, what do you say? Of course not. What do I do? It's my hat. I quickly leave the scene. I exhumed. E-X-E-U-N-T. I depart for that particular spot, and obviously I take my hat with me. There's no obligation. So too, the Moshe Rabbeinu had any obligation to go ahead, shall we say, in the context of what's happening over here, and after 3 days, return to Mitzrayim? Of course not. So there's no chiyuv al pidin whatsoever to go ahead and tell Paro that I plan on, shall we say, releasing Klal Yisrael from bondage. No, there's no such obligation. Yes.
How is that?
It can't be a shiur when you don't ask a question. Baruch Hashem. Go ahead.
How is that comparable? If what do we own in the case where Moshe was saying I'm just going for 3 days?
What they did.
They have a right to subjugate us to slavery. Avon us perach, of course not. They're akin to the gazan that I just mentioned. What do you mean?
I mean, Hashem wanted us to be there, and He deliberately harmed.
Okay, this is another issue you're raising. You're raising the issue from the psukim in Bereshis. The Brisman Absarim. Yado Atedak Yer Yelohem. Yadoa teida ki yer yezah achav eretz lohem ba'avod binosu abba meyoshana. But it doesn't say that Dafka Paro, it doesn't mention which nation is supposed to subject us to that. Perhaps it's not Paro. This is about discussion. The Rambam, the Raglan, the Ramban, all the Rishonim talk about it. But yes, a good question. But anyway, all this is, again, the reason why I mention all this is because this is all relevant to what's called, what the Torah calls, Hachvara Saleh. And obviously, when Hashem tells us to behave in a certain kind of way, we should not harden our hearts. We shouldn't even, and what I'm about to say now comes from a Litvak. I am a Litvak. You know what a Litvak is? What's a Litvak?
Someone who's rational.
Thank you. But not just someone who's rational, 100%. But I'm about to make a statement that you probably know. I will say, wow, Rosh Hashiva's in his camp. Anyway, sometimes the Ibn Shalom sends us Rimazim. How do you translate Rimazim?
Hints.
Okay, we're not Nevi'im. Lo Navi Anochi, Lo Ben Navi Anochi. So we don't fully understand what Hashem does. However, sometimes a person, by his own behavior, is in the same gather as Paro. Vani Aksha Eslei Paro. We also harden our hearts. I'm talking about myself, not you. You are all tzaddikim. Rabbi Chaim Shulevitz Zatzal told over the following story. I used to go to Yishmuzim, Sichot. How do I translate that?
To his discourses.
Discourses, thank you. I don't think he gave a discourse, he gave a shmooze. But whatever the case is, that he told over the following story. There was a very prominent Gabra Rabba, great Talmud Chacham. He used to get up actually very early in the morning, it was still nighttime, to learn before davening. You're allowed to learn before davening, there's no Easter to daven. They say, Birch HaSatera, and then you learn. But he was not able to learn unless he had, I think he said, a cup of tea. Generally, I like to have in the morning a cup of coffee. But this particular Avu Gadol had to have a cup of tea. So he asked his wife if she would not mind preparing for him a cup of tea. His wife thought that drinking a cup of tea before davening is awesome. That was her position. Now, Mr. Brewer has a whole discussion on this matter. I assume you're familiar with it. You learned the Gemara Brachas, so therefore I wouldn't even trouble you if you learned the Gemara Brachas. The Gemara says there are two reasons why a person should not eat before davening. Reason number one, says L'Sechel Al-Adam. L'Sechel Kodesh Tispal Al-Dimchem, which needs a lot of explanation. It's a lav shebichlolos. It's a very fascinating lav. And what's the second reason? The Gemara was a pasuk in Mishlei. V'aisi hishlachta chavei gavecha, atika gavecha el geyecha. When a person eats before davening, let's say, I'll give you an example. I once went to a convention, I won't mention which convention, on Shabbos morning, and it was a Kiruv kind of situation, and they davened there, wow, a little bit late, a little bit too late for me. I'm used to davening early, I assume you are also, I imagine Shabbos morning, as opposed to davening at 9:15, 9:30. Anyway, but before they davened at 9:30, they offered breakfast, breakfast of champions. Wow, they offered cakes and donuts and cereal. And what else did they serve for breakfast? And hard-boiled eggs, and a few other things, and wow, before davening. And I'm not connecting the two events, but this is what they did before davening. I thought it was a problem. They explained to me, Kir v'chaykim. For Kir v'chaykim, you can be able to call it to a kula. Okay. Kir was batir, all the Yisur in the world. They told me that the Bikuach Nefesh, the Kushner family, Pikuach Nefesh, and they explained to me today, Karim the Malchus, because the Karim the Malchus, so therefore there's a Pikuach Nefesh issue over here, because the Karim the Malchus. What did you say?
No,
I understand. Walking home would put them in a dangerous situation, but I suggested they stay in the White House. Maybe it could be there aren't enough rooms in the White House. But I suggested they stay in the White House and find the minion, find some kosher food, a Sefer Torah. No, because the Karim the Malchus, Pikuach Nefesh. You heard what I'm talking about? That's what they told me. I didn't fully grasp it. Friday night, the Rabbi Mashul spoke about it. He didn't seem to agree with it. And he actually discussed it with me beforehand, and we sort of weren't sure exactly, but I didn't hear this lumpness of cover the Malchus. Okay, anyway, so back to our Panchal Levitz. So this particular wife disagreed with her husband. He was a Gabra Rabbi. He needed a cup of tea, coffee, whatever it was, before that. I mean, she held it was awesome. But she was a good wife, and since her husband was a wonderful person and a wonderful husband, she always felt that I have to go. He satisfies me. I should satisfy him. So she prepared him a cup of tea or coffee. I don't recall now what the particulars. This goes back approximately 46 years. Anyway, so she prepared for him a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, and said whatever it may be. Once they suggested a shidduch for the daughter of this Rabin Revitzin, a shidduch for the daughter, a bachur who was a big Talmud Chacham and a big Yerush Shamayim. However, he had a slight limp in one of his legs. He limped in one of his legs. They suggested this shidduch to the Rabin, to the Revitzin. So she was very opposed to the shidduch, his wife, because of the limp. She wanted a
healthy man.
A healthy person, a wholesome person, someone who had every possible quality. Of course, she liked the fact that he was a Shamayim and a Lamdan. She also wanted someone who was a... I'm sorry?
Could walk, like, normally.
I said he had a slight limp. Hey, why you turned it into a totally different situation? So, anyway, after a short period of time, and one of the occasions where this Rebbetzin came and gave her husband the cup of tea or the cup of coffee early in the morning, she fell and broke her leg. She told her husband, you know why I broke my leg? Because I gave you tea or coffee before davening, then I hold the lasa. That's why I broke my leg. So Rav Chaim said, she made a mistake. She should have understood that because she didn't want that fellow with the limp to go ahead and marry her daughter, that's why she broke her leg.
Cat.
Ah, okay. They're commenting on the shir. So Rav Chaim's point was that sometimes a person gets remozim, and Rav Shamayim does not interpret them properly. This is the reason why I told you the story in the Ach, because I know you're very into this. I mean, if I have a suffix, I don't know what Hashem wants of me. I assume that what should I do? Look in the Shulach and discover what Hashem wants of me. That's the only way to do it. Or ask a very prominent Rav, etc., etc. And that's what one should do in order to know. But we should not always be, we should not have hachbaras halev. We shouldn't harden our hearts. We should have a soft and, if you will, kind of approach, which is generally a soft approach. I mean, often, even sometimes I encounter people, young people, very young people. Someone came to me and he insisted that this is the pshat in the Gemara. Only his pshat is the correct pshat in the Gemara. And he's a very young man. And I told him, no, I don't think he's right. And he said, no, my pshat is the correct pshat. So then I showed him in Rashi. The Rashi says, not like him. So he says, clearly Rashi is wrong. So then I showed him that Rabbi Kivega also does not learn like him. Well, obviously Rabbi Kivega is wrong. So I continued along my merry way, and it was Allah Eitzim Yalla Banim, as they say. He just was Hachbara Saleh. He decided to harden his heart. He was certain that he was right. And so one has to be extremely careful regarding this matter. I heard from a number of Gedolei Yisrael, they tell over from Abisrael Salanta, the famous founder of the Muslim movement, that once he came to Beis Medrash and he was observing how young people were learning, and they were very into the learning mode, which is a good thing, obviously. But one of them was calling the other, you silly fool, you tipesh you, you blunderbuss, etc., etc. All kinds of language, which is not so nice, because he disagreed with the other guy. And the other one said, you call me a blunderbuss, you know what you are, a total amaretz, you are a complete and totally neremes, and on and on and on. They're such beautiful compliments that we're giving each other. Anyway, so he said, I don't think that's the proper way to learn Torah. It's true that when you learn Torah, you should try to get l'cheker ha'emes, you should try to get to the truth. But at the same time, I don't think you should speak in such a fashion. You have to have the cheres and speak to chavrusa with kavod, with respect. He's your chavrusa. And the Gemara says, "Tainis al chavrusa misusa." Either you have a chavrusa or it's death. You have to have a chavrusa. So the next day, he came back to the Beis Medrash, and here's how they were talking. One said a svara, the other one said, wow, what a beautiful svara. You are a gong. You are a genius. You are absolutely in a different realm. And then the other one said a svara, and he said, you're even bigger than a gong. You're the gadol hador. And this was the conversation. Somehow the conversation switched from one extreme to another. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanta again intervened. and said, that's not the way to learn Torah. Of course, we have to try to understand what we learn, but we also have to have, obviously, the Acheres, and at the same time, we have to try to find out the truth. If someone is not telling you the correct shot in the Gemara, you have to tell him that he's wrong. But how do you go about telling him that he's wrong? Don't call him a blunderbuss. Don't use all kinds of beautiful epithets to describe him. So, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, the Gemara Chavdal over there, the Gemara describes the chiluk between Talmidei Chacham and Eretz Yisrael, Talmidei Chacham and Shebabel. In Babel, they were pugilists. And in Eretz Yisrael, Nochem Zel Zeh Ba'alocha. They got along with each other very nicely, very famously. There's a very famous machlokes, which is actually quoted by Poskim. I assume you probably learned at one point in your life, Masechet Shabbos, or maybe pieces of Masechet Shabbos, or parts of Masechet Shabbos. There's a Mishnah Dafayin Gimel. Famous Mishnah in Masechet Shabbos. You probably know that Mishnah. I assume you probably... The reason why I mention the Mishnah, because it's a famous Mishnah. I actually even Xeroxed that Mishnah. The Mishnah actually talks about a very fascinating issue, which is an issue that really is halacha l'maisa. And the Mishnah there discusses about lamates malachas. Let's say I do the act of Zriya, I plant the seed in the ground. But I do it, shall we say, on Shabbos, right before Shkia. How long does it take for the seed to actually, that I sowed in the ground to, shall we say, development, to germinate, development of something? It takes more than a few hours, would you not say so? The Gemara discusses how long it takes. But anyway, so am I chayav for the act of being Zoreah? Or for that matter, if a person starts cooking on Shabbos, but I put food on the fire, but obviously it's not going to cook for a few hours, so the Totzah, the Bishul, takes place when? After Shabbos. So now, my chayav for Bishul. What? Good, but let's say it won't reach Machol Ben Zoyin until after Shabbos. Machol is in the Gemara, Machol is in Rishonim, Machol is in the Paskin. But anyway, let's assume it's not going to reach that Machol Ben Zoyin until after Shabbos. Am I over on Bishul?
No.
So this is the subject of a very famous Machlokes.
Why isn't it the same thing as the lights?
I'm sorry?
Why isn't it the same thing as the lights? It's supposed to light them on Shabbos, but because you lit it before Shabbos.
Shvi'is Sekele.
Because that's a machlokes b'shamay b'is Hillel. We pass on the halacha that there's no shvi'is kelim against b'shamay. B'shamay holds the din that even kelim have to rest on Shabbos. We pass on b'is Hillel. There's no din of shvi'is kelim. However, here I'm doing an act on Shabbos itself. The act of zoreah is the act of putting the seed in the ground. The act of bishul is putting the food on the fire. That I'm doing on Shabbos itself, but I'm doing it to the end of Shabbos. So now the question is, since the totzah of that which I did is not yet going to be achieved till after Shabbos, am I over on Bishul, am I over on Zriya? So this is a subject of a lot of discussion, and it's a machlokes between the Avnei Nezer, the Sofer Tshuva. See, even I quote the Siddusha in Poskim. The Avnei Nezer has a machlokes with the Talmud of his, known as the Chelkas Yoyah. Chelkas Yoyah is a famous Achron. I tell you honestly, I have not seen this Achron in 46 years. I have it somewhere in my house, but when I learned in Yeshiva called Itri, 46 years ago, I had a Rosh Shiva, was one of the Dolei Adora, Michal Zilber, Shlita, used to call the Chalkos Yoyev all the time. So the Amnesia had a Talmud in the Chalkos Yoyev, and they had a long-standing disagreement regarding the question of the person who puts food on the fire on Shabbos, but it doesn't cook till after Shabbos, what's the din? The Amnesia felt that you're not Chayim and Torah for Zriya, you're not Chayim for Bishul, that was his position. And the Chalkos Yoyev disagreed, and felt that you are Chayim. You did an act of Zriya. You put the seed in the ground. Even though the results of that Zriya are not going to come until much later, you're chayav for the act of Zriya, and you're also chayav for the act of Bishul. You have a machlokes. You have a Nezer, prior to his death, was ill, was very sick. Chalkas Yev, his Talmud came to visit him. You have a Nezer asked, are you willing to back down from your psak and defer to my psak? The Rebbe tells the Talmud, are you willing to defer to my psak? Chalkas Yev said, yes. So you have a Nezer said, I don't understand. All those years that you felt that a person who puts food on the fire on Shabbos and it's only going to cook after Shabbos, and you felt that that person is chayav, now because I'm a chayla, before I'm my deathbed, somehow you change your mind, you're ready to back down? The Torah is Torah Semes. We have to seek out the truth. And therefore you can never change your mind. If you truly believe you're right, don't back down for anything. Famous story, the Abenezer Chalkas Yoyev. So undoubtedly, one has to honor one's Rebbe, one has to be mechabe one's Rebbe. If you believe that something is true, then obviously you shouldn't back down unless there's proof otherwise. And they say, I heard this from Rav Soloveitchik, he's the quote from the Kotzka, Wow, what a lot of chassidim today. I must be coming in on more. Anyway, so they quote the Kotzke that his model, his theme of his entire life was MS. That's how he used to sign also. Everything was MS. He was searching for MS. And unquestionably, that has to be our way as well. However, even though we are searching for MS, we should not harden our hearts. That is the theme of my little discussion today. We should not be involved in Hachbara Saleh. We should be open, and we should be ready to go ahead, if necessary, and admit that we're wrong when we are wrong. And we should, in effect, try our best, unquestionably, to seek out the MS. There's no question about it. But at the same time, the Gemara has. The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara discusses the question, let's say a person has to daven b'yechidus on Rosh Hashanah. You have to daven b'yechidus. How do you translate that? By yourself. You can't daven b'tzibur. So you're not supposed to daven musaf in the first 3 hours of the day. The Gemara nabed azara, nabdalad. The Gemara says over there, you shouldn't daven musaf in the first 3 hours of the day. The Paskin extend this deed even the Gabit Kiyah Shekhra. You shouldn't blow shofar then. That's what Mishnah Berurah talks about in Tafkut Tzadik Aleph, that he quotes this Gemara. It's not just Trilo, but it's also Tkiyah Shekhra. So it doesn't mean that if a person has no other possibility, let's say a person, let's say, is in the army, he won't be able to daven afterwards. So of course you should daven, you should blow the shofar even the first 3 hours of the day, because it's not halacha, which is Mikra Adin. The Gemara says, because the Minas Adin is shofar during that point in time, you want to blow shofar, that the shofar should transform the Minas Adin into Minas Arachamin. But if there's a possibility of not blowing shofar, not daven musaf the first 3 hours, of course, as I said, one should do so. Why is that so? The Gemara says, because there's man of din. And who knows whether a person has enough schusim to be omen badin b'yechidus without the schusim of the tzibur. The tzibur is a very powerful instrument. And we join the tzibur in order that we should be able to have their schuyot, to have their schusim. Ask the Gemara Kasha, but what do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the first 3 hours of the day sitting and learning Torah. He's not Yosik Badin. That's the Gemara's Kasha. I'm a Zohar over there, famous Gemara. Now, Hashem is busy learning Torah. He's not being Yosik Badin. So Dafka, in the 3 hours afterwards, Hashem is Yosik Adin. So why Dafka does the Gemara say about the first 3 hours that you're not allowed to daven b'yechidus? So the Gemara answers the following. The Gemara says, Torah dichsid be'emes, that regarding the Torah where it says emes, the Pasuk in Mishlei, it says that emes kenei b'al timkor. Once you try to acquire the Torah, which is emes, so the HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not do the Fnei Meshuras Adin. However, by Din, it doesn't say MS. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu does the Fnei Meshuras Adin. That's why don't daven musaf in the first 3 hours of the day, because then it's not shayach that Hashem should treat you the Fnei Meshuras Adin. Without that, who knows if a person will come out innocent or not. Those we see that by when it comes to Torah, there's no mark of the Fnei Meshuras Adin. Because by Torah it says MS. MS means you cannot deviate from the truth. You have to seek out the truth, and that should be your only kavana. Anyway, the key that I'm trying to point out here is that we should try to search for MS in our lives, certainly when we learn Torah, but b'chlal. However, we should not be guilty of achbara saleh, of hardening our hearts when we know that we are wrong. We should be ready to admit our shortcomings and ready to acknowledge the fact that someone else is right, someone else is correct. That's what Hashem wants us to do, to search for the MS. The Torah is Torah's MS. And that is the Torah that Hashem gave us. Hashem Yisbarach is considered to be someone who is completely MS from beginning to end. Halavai, we should be zochet to find somehow the way to look for MS, but not chas v'shalom be guilty of the chet haparo of achbara saleh. Okay.